Welcome to a special episode of Melungeon Voices, presented by the Melungeon Heritage Association. My name is Liz Malone, and I bet you know who's with me, Heather and Alina. Heather, welcome to the MHA 2022 Union Conference.
Hey, Liz.
So this is pretty exciting. So this is my first in-person Union Conference. It's so great because I've just been walking around and seeing all these people that we've been talking to on the podcast. And it's a beautiful event. We are at the Parish House in Martinsville, Virginia.
Yes.
And right now we are about to launch the author event. Heather, can you give us a little overview about this year's conference and also what this author event is all about?
So this year's conference, of course, as Liz has said, is being held in Martinsville, Virginia. And I believe this is the first time that the Melungeon Heritage Association has been in Martinsville, Virginia. But what we kind of wanted to do with the author event was, you know, of course, the last 2 years, we didn't have an in-person conference. So guests that we've had on the podcast the last two seasons, guest speakers that we've had from last year's Zoom conference, we wanted to give them an opportunity to be able to physically be at a conference, have their books with them, and meet and greet everyone. And that's really what the author event was about. And as well as we've had other very well-known Melungeon authors here as well.
So as you could probably hear, those of you listening at home or wherever you might be picking up this podcast, so we are in the actual author event venue right now. So there was a lot of ambient sounds of passerbys and authors and Melungeon Voices fans.
Yes.
High fives to all of our listeners out there. And I know it's been great because having people come by and say, oh, you produce a podcast. I love the podcast. So it's it's a beautiful thing, I have to say.
Oh, I'm glad you're enjoying yourself.
Yes. No, I'm fascinated. I think it's a wonderful event. So in this special episode, we're going to be chatting with different authors and past podcast guests as they come make their way through the author event. And tomorrow will actually be the live conference, the Union Conference. So do you have any thoughts about the Union Conference that's going to be taking place tomorrow?
Yes, we have four wonderful guest speakers tomorrow that will be lecturing over at the Virginia Natural History Museum. Mm. And it's a wonderful museum. So we're very much looking forward to it. We have four speakers, Amina Ghaffar, Stephen Gale, Ron Carson, and Melissa Timo. Melissa's going to wrap it all up for us. So we're very much looking forward to it.
Well, I think it's going to be a wonderful event tomorrow, and it's already shaping up to be a wonderful event today. Thank you so much for allowing me to come here and podcast from here. And I'm very excited to chat with everybody. So do you have any parting thoughts? Because I don't want to keep you too long. I know you got to hit the floor.
Yeah. So, you know, once again, I myself, as well as the Melungeon Heritage Association, just wants to thank everyone who has been supporting our organization, has been supporting this podcast. We just want to send out a big thank you to all of you for making this happen. I do want to put in that we are working on a season 3 Yay. Of the podcast. Yeah. So you'll have Liz and I back. And of course, this will be a special episode. It'll be a bonus episode for season 3. So we had that to look forward to. So just stay tuned. Better things are to come.
So this is going to be a wonderful new podcast season.
Yes.
Season 3. What did they say? Third time's a charm, right?
Yes.
Yes. But we're not limiting ourselves to 3 either. But
that's right.
But I think the seasons keep getting better and better as we move forward. So Heather, I'm going to let you go. You work the floor and stay tuned. We're going to be bringing some guests throughout this episode. Once again, live from the floor of the author event at the Melungeon Heritage Association Union Conference. And so we're here at the Melungeon Heritage Association's Union Conference at the author event. And now joining me is Paul Johnson. And for everyone listening, we'll remember Paul from season 1 And Paul, just to refresh people's memories, just give us a little bit of background about you.
I was a public library director for most of my career. And part of my job, once the internet genealogy boom started, was to help patrons coming in to do their family history research. And it wasn't just local patrons, because if you're in a small county seat in Virginia, you get people coming from all over the country in the summertime hunting for their ancestors. So that's how I got really hooked in on this subject, at helping other people, and then got seduced into my own ancestry. Started out as job-related.
Well, this is an amazing space that we are in right now. So do you have some background about the parish house that we're in right now?
To me, the most interesting aspect of it is that the building we are now in was... the interior was entirely demolished by fire like 12 or 15 years after it was first built. They reconstructed the entire interior, kept the walls, but it had been four stories and it got reduced to three when they rebuilt it. That was 1920.
Well, this is a beautiful space. We are sitting in, I guess, the living room, and we're in like a bay window area, which a little alcove that we're broadcasting for this podcast. So this is your first year back live in person. So just talk a little bit about what it's like coming back into the face-to-face conference environment.
MHA has been so totally transformed since my last union, which was 4 years ago. In that, and I gave the statistical report, I guess a couple of years before, we had 120-odd members. It's now 263.
Wow.
They were in like 22 states, and now they're in 35 states. And that is really remarkable to have happened during a time period when we never got to see one another in person. Mm-hmm. And I give your podcast series a lot of credit for making people feel like it is still meaningful to belong to MHA, even if we're not meeting in the flesh.
Yeah, well, it's been a wonderful experience for me as a podcast producer to work with you guys. I've learned so much, and I think it's an amazing, wonderful group of people that you bring together here at the conference. And it's so nice that we're able to kind of combine the face-to-face with continuing with our podcast efforts. So yeah, so I'm really looking forward to speaking with the authors, and tomorrow we're going to have the actual Union Conference event. So if you don't mind, Paul, I'd love for you to share some information about your writing and the works that you're sharing with those who are in attendance here.
Well, my last book that was a full-fledged book of my own was published in 2008 and was my family history exploration. It was called Pell-Mellers. But I have recently condensed that using just the Civil War portion, which was the second half of the book, into a smaller book called Pell-Mell. Now, I have, since being an author of my own books, have really put all my energy into being an editor for the last 12 years or so. And I talked in the podcast about Sarah Stanley Grimke, who was somebody who just fell off the radar screens, you know, published in one book after she died, never really paid any attention to. And then I started stumbling upon all these clues about her. The secret society she belonged to, the man she married, their daughter. And slowly pieces fell into place to the point that I felt like I have to publish this author. I have to bring her back to life with the biographical, you know, veneer explaining who she was. So that was my most recent sort of independent project of my own. And it is tied into mixed race history. Through not Sarah, but her husband and his family, who were South Carolinians, formerly enslaved, who both brothers became really active in the civil rights movement and, you know, had fled north for their education. So I was immersed in late 19th century, you know, racial minority history in the U.S., first with my own family, and then with the Grimkes. So it's like two back-to-back experiences with just immersing oneself in a family's history.
Well, I have to say that it is such a refreshing moment for me because I'm usually locked up in a studio in front of monitors and recording, to actually get to meet everybody and see you face to face. And we've talked a bunch of times, and it's wonderful to meet you and get to see your expressions in person. So do you have any words for those who maybe couldn't make it to this year's conference, and what can they might be able to expect from the MHA in the coming year, and to, you know, stay on board and maybe to come join you for the 2023 Union Conference?
We have, in addition to the authors who are present, we have a lot of projects in the works. People who are not speakers this year, but we know they're doing things that we are going to want to hear about in the future. So one of the things that, you know, I would encourage people who are listening from afar is, if you're a member and you have an interest in what you'd like for us to do in the future, you know, MHA board is all ears. We want to hear suggestions. And of course, having this all out on podcast, or most of it anyway, gives people a whole lot of incentive to keep up with what's going on.
Well, we'll make sure we remind people how to reach the MHA. The website, www.melungeon.org, is where you can go. And we will make sure you have email addresses and all kinds of contact information. And of course, this podcast, we're looking forward to doing a season 3 with you guys. Very excited. I know Heather's already busy working on the lineup. And Paul, I want to thank you so much for stopping by and giving us a few minutes and sharing some thoughts about the MHA this year.
Well, I want to thank you for coming to Martinsville and for saying such nice things about our beautiful venue.
Oh, it's amazing. Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
Bye-bye.
And right now, I am being joined by two very lovely ladies, which is, you know, double the fun for me right now. This is my first twofer here so far at the show. And so I'm here with author Darlene Nixon. And Darlene, I want you to introduce your guest that's joining you with the microphone.
Awesome. I am so happy to be here with my mom, Aline Watts Miller.
Oh, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. We are so delighted to be here. We love to talk about this subject matter.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Well, I love that when I was introduced to you, I'm introduced as author and inspiration. Love it. That's a beautiful story. So you're here for the author event. Is this your first MHA conference?
It is.
Yay.
Well, it is in person.
Okay.
We did the Zoom
right
one last year.
Yep.
And really enjoyed that. And, of course, just enjoy the whole idea of the Melungeon Heritage Association and bringing all the information together, so we had to be part of it.
Wonderful. So we're here in Martinsville, Virginia. And so tell me, where's home?
For me, it's Northeast Georgia, Hartwell, Georgia.
Okay.
And for me, it's Southern Indiana, Austin, Indiana is the little town.
Let's talk about I'm going to say books,
yes,
plural, because a lot of people are just here with a book. And I said to Darlene, I said, can you just bring over your book? I just want to take a look at it and get handed a little stat. So I said, someone's been very, very busy. So tell me about, which work would you like to talk about first?
Well, we can mention Singing Down the Preacher first, because
okay,
it was written first.
Okay.
And we did that one probably about 20 years ago. And we wanted to talk about the story about how Mom and her family came out of the secluded area of eastern Kentucky, Appalachian Mountains,
mm-hmm,
and into a sort of a small town civilization, and the culture shock that brought about to the family.
Wow. And this is written 20 years ago.
Yes.
Wow, that's amazing.
It is. And so when the opportunity came to do another, we've had lots of people say they want to hear more about the Melungeon side of the story. So late this couple years ago, and then when the pandemic started, we began to talk. We were talking every week, maybe every few days at that time. And we decided, hey, let's tell the story about what you remember is growing up there. So we took 12 chapters based on 12 months of the year,
mm-hmm,
and made that into Our Side of the Mountain, because each chapter recounts how she remembered growing up, how they had to survive, what they had to do to get along day to day.
This is a beautiful book, a beautiful cover. It's a very nice-looking book.
Thank you. The cover itself is based on a photograph of Mom as a little girl.
Oh.
And yes.
Well, you were not kidding, Mom. You were inspiration.
She was. And so my cousin's wife is an artist, and she took that photograph and made this rendering with Pocahontas in the side and on the hillside representing the home place where she grew up, because we did also find our ancestors go back to Pocahontas through the research of doing this as well.
Wow.
Yes. So it's just exciting.
And then the third is?
This is a companion book is what we call it.
Okay.
It's sort of a cookbook, also based on the months of the year, talking about the different foods and things that they would harvest and what they would make during those times.
So tell people where they can find your books now.
Okay. Primarily Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm. Give those titles again.
The first one is Singing Down the Preacher.
Mm-hmm.
The second is Our Side of the Mountain.
And they can also look you up by author, Darlene Nixon.
That's right.
And do you have a website? Do you have any social media that you could share with people?
They can find me on Facebook is the best way.
Okay.
Darlene Nixon at Facebook.com.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a website. It's not used as much, but it is HisVisionWorks.com.
HisVisionWorks.com.
Yes.
Got it.
And we can also tell about Singing Down the Preacher. The title of this came from an old religious practice that they did growing up in the hills. They would only have church meeting maybe once a month.
Wow.
Several preachers would come, and they would all want to give a full sermon. Well, the congregation had a way of controlling the timing of that. And when they got tired of hearing from one preacher, they would begin to stand up and begin to sing the hymns, and they would sing louder and longer until they sang him down.
Hmm.
And then he would sit down and the next one would get up.
Obviously, you are not new to being Melungeon, but you are relatively new to the MHA.
Right.
So can you share some information about how you learned about the MHA?
About the Melungeon heritage. Mom saw an episode on Kentucky.
KET.
KET, the Kentucky Public Television.
And the person showed pictures of the Melungeon people. And I said, I look just like those people, so I have to research it. And so I told Darlene about it, and we just kept going till we finally got the book.
That's wonderful. Well, we are so blessed to have you join us, being a part of the MHA. I call myself an honorary Melungeon.
Well,
I'm a Melungeon.
We'll take you.
I'm a Melungeon in heart and spirit.
Yeah,
maybe
exactly.
Not by DNA, but that's okay.
It is okay.
I think that it's a great story that you're sharing. And also, there are so many people out there that are hearing about the Melungeons. And in order to keep programs like this going, events like this going, we need people to join, become members, join the MHA, melungeon.org. It supports all sorts of things, this wonderful live event here, this beautiful facility, the Parish House.
Absolutely.
And this podcast, Melungeon Voices, which... I'm in love with this project. I'm so glad that I came on board with this.
We are too. We think it's very important. And the history that we are being able to find through our own journeys of discovering our ancestors. We travel back and find ancestors with the American Revolution, with the Civil War, going back even into Europe and finding their travels coming over. And how they started beginnings here in colonial America, and for whatever reason, they decided to seclude themselves into the mountains. And in our family's case, the Nobles and the Wattses came across from the Virginia side of the Appalachians to the Kentucky side. They lived in rock houses before they made their own cabins. And those rock houses are still there today. But they stayed in that area for almost two centuries, unchanged.
Wow.
Right. So that's why her story is so unique, because...
We lived like pioneers.
Mm-hmm.
even into the 1950s, we were making everything we needed. Yes. If we didn't make it, we wouldn't have it.
Oh, my gosh.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Everything they did, everything they knew came from the mountain.
And everything we had to eat, we grew it.
Such a simple way of life, back to basics.
Yeah.
Well, you two are so much fun. You're so lovely, and I'm so glad that I got to meet you.
And you as well.
Thank you.
You too.
And thank you so much for stopping by the booth. I appreciate you.
Yes, and you too.
Good luck with your books.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And now stopping by the Melungeon Voices podcast booth here at the MHA 2022 Union Conference is Dr. Melissa Carver. So nice to meet you.
Hello. It is nice to meet you. You are so beautiful, by the way.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't have a face for podcasting, face for radio, face for... But it's okay.
You have a face for all the things. Anything you want.
I'm going to give her a little tip after we turn the microphone off, but that's... And so you're here for the author event this year. And you're attending the conference, and you'll be joining us on season 3 of the Melungeon Voices podcast, which we are very excited to have you. And so I'm holding your lovely book, and I love this title. Who the hell told you that, with a big ass question mark? I can say ass because she said hell. She started it.
I did start it.
She started it. So tell me, Melissa, tell me about your book.
It is all about getting rid of indoctrinated thoughts, all of those things that do not serve us, whether we programmed ourselves or whether we were programmed as children growing up or along the way, relationships, etc. And how it also intertwines with my heritage and being Melungeon is so many people look at a person and they think they know their heritage and they think they know their background. And sometimes we even do that to ourselves in the mirror, right? Because we don't know a lot of our heritage was hidden. We were lied to. So getting rid of those indoctrinated thoughts all the way around from A to Z.
So do you ever find that people will look at you? I know people will do this when they look at me and they get that look on their face where they're, you know, the gears are turning and they're trying to say in their head, in their little thought cloud, is she this, is she that,
yeah,
is she blah, blah, blah.
What are you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I get that a lot. What are you?
Yeah. And you know, they don't even have to say the words. You see it. That little hamster that's turning that little wheel, trying to figure that out. So those are the types of thoughts and issues that you address in your book?
It is, along with, you know, working through emotional trauma, mental trauma, PTSD, all of those things. Any and all things that are not serving us and our better good and moving forward in our personal evolution.
Okay, that's awesome. So I'm always interested in hearing this answer from people, especially coming to this conference. This is my first union conference since working with the MHA. So how did you learn about being Melungeon?
Well, it was about probably 18 years ago, I decided to have the DNA test done. And I already knew some of my heritage, but I didn't know all of the things. So like I knew I was Native, right? So I knew Cherokee Shawnee for sure. And after I got back the results, I was talking to another family member who was also interested, and she was like, that's Melungeon. All of those things are Melungeon. I was like, what the hell is a Melungeon? I know. Huh? I don't even know.
I think that was Heather's reaction too.
Not
what?
Only.
I'm a Melungeon?
Right. Not only am I hearing this word for the first time and knowing that this is an actual ethnicity, but it's my own, and I'm just learning about it as an adult. So I was a little frustrated, I think, to say the least, because, again, so many things were hidden because people were afraid. I understand it makes complete sense, right, when you look at everything that was going on in the history and people just trying to protect their children and their families. But I'm glad that I found out so that I can now teach my children about it. But the more I started digging in and getting these individual names and learning their backgrounds and their stories, it was just amazing. I suggest anyone dig into their heritage, not just the DNA test, but actually really going to these as many resources as you can possibly go to find the individual stories of the individual people.
Well, as I've been floating around this room during this author event and just hearing people talking amongst themselves, I would say almost every conversation you hear, did you have your DNA? Oh, do you know what I learned about my DNA? It's fascinating. I haven't had mine done. I'm very anxious in a good way to do it because I was adopted. And even though I know where I was adopted from, I'm from South Korea. But I know that there's some extra things going on with everybody. We all have that.
Right. So, and I love that we are learning now that everyone does have that, because that helps cut down, you know, racism, prejudice, all sorts of things that are going on, not only in our country, but the world, right? Just people judging other people based upon how they look, or maybe their spirituality, or whatever the things are. But if you learn that was in your family history, it can reduce judging other people. Even if you don't still relate to it, that's fine, you know, whatever. But I think finding out that that's there does help build those bridges.
And how did you find out about the MHA?
Oh, well, the more I started learning, right, it popped up on a lot of my searches. I became a member many, many years ago. And then I kind of drifted away from it because I got busy with my own research and my own books and guest speaking and such at different areas. And I just kind of let it fall off, I guess. And then I got connected back again on social media. So here we are.
Well, we absolutely look forward to having you on season 3, and we will, of course, go much more in depth about your story. We'll talk much more about your book. But in the meantime, for anyone who is listening to this podcast who could not make it to the author event, can you tell people where they can get your book?
You can get it on many different outlets, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, a lot of places online. Or you can also get it on my website, which is drmelissacarver.com.
And again, the title of the book is, I think I just left saying the title, Who the Hell Told You That, with a big question mark at the end. Okay, thank you, Dr. Carver. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
And look forward to speaking with you very soon.
Thank you, me too.
Thanks. Joining me now is another author. Shocking, because we're at an author's event here. And I'm just had the most charming conversation with my next guest, Joanna Overbay. So welcome to the Millennium Voices podcast, live from the MHA Union Conference. And tell me, Joanna, is this your first conference?
No, no.
You're like, oh gosh, no, no.
No, no. I'm 80 years old, so oh. I've been coming ever since, I guess, maybe the second or third union.
Oh, okay,
when
great.
Brett Kennedy was still the active and alive and doing these events.
It's so interesting because the MHA membership is so diverse. Whoever I meet, it doesn't matter their age. Some people are just discovering the MHA for the very first time. But it is so refreshing to meet someone who has so much history with the organization.
Well, thank you. To tell you just a little bit about my book, Windows on the Past,
yeah.
It's based on 37 oral histories that tells about the life of growing up in Vardy, Hancock County, Tennessee. Vardy is a Melungeon community that was not really known as a Melungeon community until later on, even though it was there, it was kind of hidden and not talked about. Presbyterian Home Mission School of Vardy was started in like in 1899, and it is speculated that the reason that the Presbyterians got interested in the community is because my great-grandfather, Beatty Collins, fought for the Union Army, and we suppose that he met someone during his Army days who was telling him about the home mission schools that the Presbyterians had. They had a plethora of them all up and down the Appalachian area throughout the world. So when he came back from the war, it was one of his missions in life is to begin a better educational system for the people in our community. We live in the community of Vardy that was named for the patriarch of the Melungeon, Vardaman Collins, who came into the valley in the early 1800s and settled. Then the Presbyterians came during the 1880s, and by 1899 they had established a Vardy Presbyterian church there. And then in 1902 they built their first home mission school. And then in 1929 they built their second home mission school. The home mission school built in 1929 was 3 stories, had 96 windows, had the first vocational school in the state of Tennessee. It also had electricity, and the electricity in 1929 was generated by a Delco generator. It was not until the 40s that FDR passed the Rural Electrification Act. And during the 40s, the electric wires were brought across the mountain from Virginia, Powell Mountain in Virginia, and the wires were strung up and down the valley for electricity for people in the homes. However, during World War II, the electric wires were stripped out, the copper taken, and sent to Oak Ridge for the Manhattan Project. Thereby, all of the school buildings and the church, the school, the mission house, my mom and dad's house, and the clinic, all of those buildings were already wired for electricity. They were the only ones in that valley that had electricity from Powell Valley until after the war in 1948. So we really had a very fortunate experience there at Vardy. And the book, Windows on the Past, has the oral histories from 37 students who went to Vardy, to school and to the church there. So I think once someone reads these oral histories, they'll get a better idea of what life was like in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, mm-hmm. because it goes generation from generation. And we have descriptions of each of the houses that were there on the campus of the home mission schools. One of the unique things about the home mission school that I attended is that we had artifacts in a little museum. And the artifacts would come from different Presbyterian home mission schools throughout the world. For instance, one of the places that we studied, of course, was China. And in 1948, whenever the communists ran the Christians out of China, one of the missions there, Presbyterian home missions, was Dr. Bell's home mission. Dr. Bell was the father of Ruth Bell, Billy Graham's wife. Whenever he had sent those little shoes to our museum, we no longer could send them back in 1948 because he'd been run out. So those little shoes are there at the museum that we founded and started at the Vardy Church. So the church no longer exists as a church. It is a museum. We are open every Saturday from 11 o'clock to 3 o'clock so people can come and visit. You just look on our webpage, vardymuseum.org, mm-hmm. or our Facebook page, which is the Vardy Community Historical Society. And we enjoy visitors. We started something new this summer, which is a Mahaley front porch picking. So every third Saturday evening during the summer from 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock, we have area musicians who come and they play their music on that front porch, and people can bring their coolers and their lawn chairs and sit out in the summer afternoon and enjoy that atmosphere.
And so, Joanna, can you share with people how they can find your book, Windows on the Past?
Well, we sell it at our museum. Mm-hmm. You can contact us through our Historical Society Facebook page or through our web page. You also can get it on Amazon.
Like everything else in this world these
everything
days.
Is on Amazon. But we, our Historical Society doesn't make any money if it's sold on Amazon. The only money that we are able to make to help us continue with our historical projects there at Vardy is what we sell in our gift shop there.
Okay. So we definitely encourage people to buy direct.
Right, buy direct.
Buy direct.
Of course, we may be a little bit more expensive than Amazon. But
hey, but it's going for a good cause.
We have a lot of interesting things going on. I'm really excited that we have two new board members. Mm-hmm. One of the board members is our webmaster, mm-hmm. and his name is Aaron Collins. And the other board member that I'm excited about is Jenny Collins. She's our genealogist. Mm-hmm. So we have all of our board members are very active in the organization and what we're doing, trying to keep things in perspective so that we can tell the story of the Melungeons who lived in the Vardy community.
Well, thank you so much, Joanna. It was such a pleasure to talk to you and learning so much. Gosh, and that in this, it's just such a short sitting. And,
thank you.
And again, go out and get Windows on the Past by Direct, people. Thank you so much, Joanna.
Thank
it was
you.
A pleasure to meet you. And now I have a very familiar voice that now I'm putting a face to the voice is LaTanya Beatty. And LaTanya, you were our guest on episode 3 from season 2. And yeah, so I'm so glad to have you, you know, sit down and get to see your smiling face.
Yes, thank you for having me. And it's nice to finally meet you in person. What a pleasure.
It's so nice, the post-pandemic period, right?
Yes, it was harsh, but we survived it, so it
we
was
made
harsh.
It. We made it, yeah. So, LaTanya, you are a genealogist and an author, and you are here with your book for the author event.
Correct.
Can you share some information about the book that you have?
Yes, so I have two books. One of them are... it's titled Vivid Dreams, mm-hmm. and basically the book consists of actual dreams that I've had over the years and dreams that I've written in my journal, and I just decided through the pandemic, I didn't have anything else to do, so I just decided to publish a book to share with everyone, and it's a thriller-type mystery book. And my second book is a book compiled of poems over the years from my teenage into adulthood years. And it's titled Where Life Has Taken Me, compilation of poems from my teenage years into adulthood. And so basically that book's the book consists of things ranging from politics, relationships, COVID-19, and also one section of the book is dedicated to my late grandfather. He passed away about 2 years ago as I was writing the book.
Oh, well, I'm so sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Well, it is very interesting that the COVID period, if we have to find something positive in that, is that I think a lot of people really tapped into their creativity. And you, being a writer, it sounds like you've made very good use of that time.
Yes, actually, that was an eye-opening moment during the pandemic. And I just decided to be productive, and I was able to reach inside myself and to just focus and be creative. I had time to think, and that was an eye-opening moment for me.
So in the first book that you just talked about, you said you wrote about your dreams. You're talking about literal dreams, like sleeping dreams?
Yes.
I'm kind of fascinated by the fact that you were able to recall your dreams so well that you were able to write about them. Because don't you hear that a lot? Like, I wake up and I'm like, oh my God, that was the weirdest dream. And then I said, and I remember it, and then 5 minutes later, poof, it's gone.
Right. And some dreams actually stay with me. Mm-hmm. And other dreams, they are quick to forget. So I would always make it a point to leave a notebook beside me so that it would not happen, so I wouldn't forget. And other dreams, they just stuck with me, and I was able to remember them. So I didn't know if it was a sign of something, but they were very vivid. Very vivid, and I also dream in color.
Wow.
Yes, and some of them are symbolic. I've also had dreams to where they were similar to premonitions, to where they actually happened in real life. So it's very, very bizarre, but yes, and it runs in the family.
Wow.
It runs in the family.
Tanya, is this your first in-person MHA conference?
Yes, it is. Oh. My very first time.
Well, welcome. We're so happy to have you here. And I'm sure you're looking forward to tomorrow's actual conference. And today we have, this is sort of the appetizer, right?
Yes. I was so honored that Heather invited me. I've always read about the Melungeons, and actually I have a connection with my own genealogy, so I felt like it was important for me to be here, to be a part of this.
Well, we're so glad that you're here.
Thank you.
Now, I'm sure people are going to want to know where they can buy your books.
So basically, my books, you can purchase them on Amazon, and I also have audiobooks and Google Play Store, Apple, different sites. I had a list, and of course I forgot the list, but I know Google Play, Apple is one of them, Walmart, so those are several of the many places that people can listen to my audiobooks as well.
That's great. So it sounds like it's very readily available.
Yes.
I guess when in doubt, Google a Tonya Beatty, right?
Yes.
And find you.
I try.
Now, do you have a website or any social media that where people can follow you?
Yes. Yeah, so I'm all over Facebook. I do have a public page. It's voiceover artists, and they can just find me under Tonya Evans Beatty. And also, I have a blog, and if you do a Google search for Saponi Girl 76, that should come up. And also, through Google, my blog should come up, Saponi Girl 76.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you so much for stopping by. It was so nice to chat with you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. And I'm sure we'll be mingling during the rest of this conference.
Well, I certainly look forward to it.
This is like a family reunion for me. I'm like, well, I get to see all my podcast guests. Look at that.
Yes, and I'm so happy to be here to meet everyone. I've been looking forward to it.
I think we've all needed this. So,
yes.
So wonderful to have you, and thank you again.
Thank you.
And the latest author to stop by the Melungeon Voices podcast booth is Dr. Terry Mullins. It's such a pleasure to meet you. How are you?
Thank you. Very well. Having a good day.
Great. Is this your first Melungeon Heritage Association conference?
No, I've been to the Melungeon Heritage Association conferences for probably 20 years.
Oh, okay.
In fact, I was served on the board of the MHA for several years.
Ah, so you're a pro at this.
Well, I enjoy coming.
And I'm sure you're enjoying the fact that we're back together in person as opposed
Absolutely.
To going virtual.
We've missed seeing everybody for 2 or 3 years now.
Oh, that's excellent. So you're here at the author's event, and you have your book that I'm just in love with the title, Melungeons Out of the Dungeon.
Correct.
So can you share some information about the premise of your book?
Okay, the premise of my book was, as far as the title is concerned, the Melungeon story coming out and being something that people are willing to share and talk about and learn about today. At one time, the Melungeon story was basically in the dungeon, and it was something people did not speak of. Even in families, if they knew anything about it, they just knew enough to know they didn't want to share that with anyone because it was embarrassing, secretive, mysterious. And the Melungeon story is mysterious, but it is fascinating, and it is a story that in the past several decades, thanks to people like Dr. Brent Kennedy and others, has become something that is scholarly examined, not just thrown to the or cast to the side, but it's really something that people have taken seriously and taken the opportunity to try to find out more about. What I did in terms of the Melungeon Out of the Dungeon book is I felt like after attending several of the MHA events that there was nothing really aimed at young people for them to understand the story. So I tried to write Melungeons Out of the Dungeon at basically an upper elementary level so that kids could read it and understand the story too. Sharing in the work of the Melungeons Out of the Dungeon was my cousin, Jason Altizer, who did many of the illustrations in the book as well. And as a result, we were able to put together something that we can share with people, not just kids, because kids do enjoy it, but also adults, because it is basically the story of the Melungeons. It's sort of like a primer. It's very simple, mm-hmm. not complicated. It's a read that even adults enjoy, because even though it's written for upper elementary, many adults read it about the same level, and they would enjoy it because mm-hmm. they don't have to dig in too deep. They can get a succinct story of the Melungeons.
And can you share your story about how you discovered what it was to be a Melungeon?
Yes. Probably growing up, I had no idea, like most people, knew nothing about the Melungeon part of their family history, if there was a Melungeon history to their family. But my family lived in Virginia, in the southwestern part of the state, in Tazewell County. And I'd really not heard much of Melungeons. Did have a teacher in high school who was fascinated with the Melungeons, and she had shared some of the story of the Melungeons with her classes, but regretfully, I'd never had her class, so I would just hear about it secondhand or thirdhand from other students who would talk about what she'd been talking about. But when I left Tasman and went to college at James Madison in Harrisonburg, Virginia, while I was there, I sort of got more interested in my family tree. My mother's family were from up in the Shenandoah Valley, so I was there where I could do some research on her family. But I also was interested in my dad's family, which I started asking questions about at the same time. And I found out, talking to him and his brothers and sister, that their dad was from Tennessee. I didn't know much about that, but I investigated enough to find out where in Tennessee and to find out if there was anybody down there that still might know him or knew of him. And I found that he had a brother-in-law that was still living down there. My grandfather had been dead 20 years when I was born, so I never knew him. But this uncle, great uncle for me, was still living down there. And I went down to visit him and his family, and he pointed me in the direction of some people who knew more than he did. And I got quite a epiphany as I discovered who my family really was, where they came from, and what that Mullins story was in the Melungeon story.
I always love hearing people's stories about their origins and how they stumbled upon, in some cases, this unique ancestry.
It's very unique, but it was something that was never spoken about in my family. And I have a theory that when my grandfather left Tennessee in around 1900, 120 years ago, that he came to Virginia and left Tennessee behind, perhaps to leave behind that part of his story. Because being a Melungeon was not fun. They were ostracized. They were discriminated against. They were different. So in Tennessee, he was John Mullins, one of those Melungeons from over there on Newman's Ridge. But when he got to Virginia, which is over 100 miles northeast up the Clinch Valley, and settled in a very remote valley called Burke's Garden, he was simply John Mullins, a white tenant farmer. He married a local girl. They raised a family. And I doubt that anybody ever challenged or questioned or even wondered anything about him then. He was just one of the farmers in the valley. Mm-hmm.
I love these stories. Mm-hmm. I could listen to them all day.
It is a fascinating story.
So can you tell people where they can find your book, Melungeons Out of the Dungeon?
Melungeons Out of the Dungeon probably could be best or most easily purchased through the Melungeon Heritage Association. They do have copies.
Mm-hmm.
And also the Tazewell County Historical Society in Tazewell, Virginia has copies. And I believe both organizations have presence on Facebook and in social media.
Yep, they sure do. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much.
It's been
a pleasure chatting with you, hearing about your amazing story.
Thank you.
And Dr. Mullins, please enjoy the rest of the conference.
I look forward to it, and thank you for speaking with me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm here with Beverly Scarlett, who is here for the author event. And not only that, she was in episode 2 of season 1. Wow, that was when we were just getting started.
That is true.
Oh,
and thank
goodness.
You for having me, Liz.
Oh my gosh, it's wonderful to see you. And I've been saying that recording here from the event, it's been so nice to run into so many people that I've only seen or heard as voices.
Yes.
And now I get to, and I've seen all of your lovely photos because
thank you.
The promos that we've done and the videos, but just to see people up close and personal, it's really, it feels like we're making progress. We're actually moving forward.
We are. And it's a very special moment.
Yes, it sure is. Well, I always loved your story, especially how it all began with the photo in the attic. And that always stuck with me for all of these episodes that we've been doing. Now, and when we interviewed you back in during season 1, you were working on your book at the time. And now you're done. It's out.
It's done. It's out. I was really pressing hard to get it done before my mother passed away. And I missed by a couple months, but it's out.
Well, I'm so sorry for your loss.
Well, it's okay. She made it to 95.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a celebration for sure.
With 3/4 of a heart.
Oh, my goodness.
And able to recognize her family. So all I could do was just kiss her.
Oh. Well, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. But, you know, hugs to her in heaven.
Yes.
And wonderful memories. And that sounds like she had a beautiful, wonderful life.
She did, and left me with so many treasures. You know, I still miss her. I look for her every time I see a cardinal and we make eye contact. It's like, thanks, Mom.
Oh, that's great. Whenever I see a ladybug, I think of my late mother. So I have my little thing, too.
Yes.
So tell us about the book, because I'm sure people are very interested in hearing on what you've put out there.
So the book is The Harris Family of Orange County, 318 years of African-American, Native American history. And it's really my mom's story. I just wrote it down.
Mm.
And what we did, we traveled, and she'd share stories. I'd confirm those stories. But it's about her great-grandmother. And I happened to find the photo in the attic. It's actually a portrait. In 1979, when I was headed off to college, I knew there was something different about my family because of color diversity, hair texture diversity, eye color diversity, but nobody would talk about what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so once I found that portrait, I made the mistake of saying, Mom, why are you hiding an Indian man in the attic? She still gives me the what for, even when I say it today. And she pretty much chided me. Told me don't touch it again, put it back where I got it. But once I got into college and started to learn more about African-American history, Native American history, I attended a HBCU, so they focus heavily on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would come back and talk to her, and so she opened up. And the long and short of the story is they've been there in Orange County for what I now know is many centuries, between the Eno River and the Little River. And in order to stay alive, they just remained quiet, hid out in the woods, but they had their own operating community. And through the Melungeon Heritage Association, and hearing all the history and learning all that Dr. Smallwood has to share, I now have confirmed what I thought for a very long time, and that's where Maroon community, a triracial community, still there in the woods. Now, what's even more special, and I hope people will be able to see one day, is something that we've discovered since you and I talked last, and that is we have a mound and about 30 cairns, and we're pretty sure it's a burial place for Native. Yes.
Wow.
Yes. I see you getting
the
chills.
Face.
No,
like, oh.
you're responding, and once you go there, you feel it.
Wow.
Angela, Tracy, and Heather were there out in February, And Angela's son, Nicholas, told me today it was so tranquil. That's why he could take a nap, and he was right there sleeping in front of a Karen. It was cold. It was wet. He felt nothing, but the spirit took him a nice nap, got up rejuvenated. You know, but
that's
I hope that
spiritual embrace.
It is a spiritual embrace. So I had an archaeologist come out and survey the place. I'm still working on, waiting on his report. But he told me this. He says, Beverly, I can't tell you exactly what this is because I've never seen anything like this in the 30 years of my work. But it also means I can't tell you what it's not. And, you know, I don't want it excavated. You know, whoever's in that mound will stay, or whatever's in that mound will stay. But with all the Karens around, I'm pretty certain of what it is.
Wow.
Also, I've been digging in the creek after rains. I have two tomahawk heads.
Oh, my gosh.
I have a, I think they call it a nutting stone. And it's so interesting because your thumb fits right on the little part where you just have hammer stone. That's what they call it for cracking nuts, a hammer stone. But just all these little things, it's just Sally saying, keep up the work, keep up the work.
That's amazing.
So I will continue to work. I don't recall if I said last time, but everywhere I go, I take Sally with me. So when I was in private practice as a lawyer, Sally was in my office. She never had a chance to be a lawyer. When I became a prosecutor, Sally was in the courthouse in the DA's office. When I became a judge, Sally was in the judge's chambers, because in 1845, she couldn't have dreamed of becoming anything that I've had the opportunity to become. And but for the resilience and tenacity that she's given me, I wouldn't be able to do it. So she will never be hidden again. Wherever I go, Sally goes with me.
Wow. Beverly, I could sit here and talk to you all day.
Oh.
I would. Well, Beverly, please tell everybody where they can get your book.
So you can get my book, right, well, let me make a correction. Since you and I spoke, I actually have a total of three now.
Oh, my gosh.
So
you've been busy.
Two are available through the Eno River Association. Eno River, you can Google that. And those two books are actually a journal with a volume one, volume two. The title is Ribbons of Color Along the Eno River, and it's the history of people of color along the Eno River. Okay? For the Harris family of Orange County, you can actually email Indigenous Memories. Indigenous, the word, memories, all written as one word, at gmail.com. Make your request. We'll let you know the cost. We'll mail it out to you.
Listen to that. Buy direct, people. That's
really
been the
theme. No middleman.
No middleman.
No middleman.
Indigenousmemories at gmail.com.
Yes.
Got it.
And the book is Mom's Story. Indigenous Memories is a nonprofit that we set up to preserve our history. So book sale money goes to keeping our trails up that lead to the mound, and the little things we need to just preserve what we have.
That's wonderful.
Yes. But I keep none of it, and I'm happy with that.
Beverly Scarlett, you are so amazing.
Well,
love
you. Love you.
You're so
fabulous.
You're fantastic. Like I said, I don't want her to leave my table.
Oh.
But I have to let her go. I have to share. Yeah. But Beverly, we look forward to chatting with you. We will see you tomorrow.
Sounds great. I'll be here. Yes, ma'am.
And so, folks, go out and support our authors here that are associated with the Melungeon Heritage Association. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Liz.
And you
it's
have a great
seeing
one.
You.
Talk
you
to you soon.
All right.
You've been listening to the Melungeon Voices podcast. On behalf of myself, Heather Andalina, and the entire MHA Executive Committee, we'd like to thank all of those who participated in making this episode possible. For more information, you can visit them on the web at melungeon.org. That's melungeon.org. The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast episode do not necessarily represent those of the MHA. Melungeon Voices is presented by the Melungeon Heritage Association. All rights are reserved.